coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. This is issue 292. We are cooking our way to 300, Cole.
We are indeed. In fact, once it's done, I got the timer set and everything, but once it's done, we dine in hell!
It takes a long time to preheat that oven. It takes 8 years to preheat that oven to 300.
It's a slow burn.
It is. If you speaking of slow burns, this is a second part of a surprise two-part series that Cole and I are doing. This one is Cole's baby. So I'm going to turn it over to Cole. Let him explain what we're doing tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Dong dong,
dong dong. This is Order in the Court.
Love it.
Cole is a court. I had one day just as things mull about in my head, it occurred to me there are a lot of major, classic, iconic court cases in comics.
Yes.
There are some that just are, you know, huge aspects of jurisprudence writ large in, you know, the massive four-color splash page. Let's take a break from beating up bad guys and see what happens in the courtroom.
Right.
So this week we are going to see you in court.
we've donned our robes and our powdered wigs.
That's right. And we are ready to take a look at some courtroom drama as it's played out in the pages of some of our favorite comics, past and present.
Well, and I think that I wanted to say something real quick. It's something I think we missed in the last issue that I think pertains to both of these, because, you know, we're doing Law and Order. Last issue was Law, this issue is Order. And I think that we didn't discuss the fact that in both of these issues, when we start talking about the judicial process in a world where there are superheroes, when we talked about the criminal, you know, the policing of a world with superheroes and superpowers, it's important to continue to show the moral compass in a world in which you've got stories like Kingdom Come.
Yes.
You know, and I think that was something that we didn't touch on very heavily that bleeds into this issue pretty well. So I'll let you take it from there, but I just wanted to make sure we got that in there.
Oh yeah, we definitely want to talk a lot as this has evolved beyond its original concept. You had it started out just to be about the court cases, and now it's become more about judicial law.
Yeah,
because Andy brilliantly takes this idea and says, "Hey, why don't we do Law and Order?" Dong dong.
We just really and, like dong dong. That's the whole point.
That's right.
Really.
And I'm not even going to attempt a Jerry Orbach right now.
That's a verb now. I never knew that. That two Jerry Orbach was.
I'm not going to Orbach it or Waterston it for that matter.
Can you?
Where does it end?
Can you ice tea it?
I'm kind of like bobbing my head.
I can tell. Oddly enough, I can tell.
Yeah. It's like they tell you if you work on the phones and people can tell if you're smiling or not. You can actually tell somebody's doing the Sam Waterston. Where does it end, Your Honor? My head will fall off. It's like balancing a baseball bat on your palm.
It's got a huge melon. It's got like orange on
the chin. I have thoughts because I was born with the same size head I have today. I just had to grow into it. It was like Charlie Brown and cephaly issues. But, you know, the thing about it is it occurred to me there were all these, like, court cases like the trial of the Incredible Hulk, or I believe that Captain America was
oh yeah, for sure.
Dieted at one time, and then of course I go, were there court involvement with in the Civil War? I mean, somebody had to preside over that.
Oh yeah, well I mean it wasn't as much a well of course there was, but it wasn't. It was almost an immigration court situation. I've made the mistake. Cole, are you familiar with the TV show Adam Ruins Everything?
Yes, I've not seen it, but I know of it, and I know what it is conceptually.
Yeah, they just dumped a bunch of it on Netflix. So I've been watching a bunch of Adam Ruins Everything, and they did one on immigration, and I feel like the Civil War and the Registration Act were more of an immigration court situation than an actual court of law situation where, you know, you had guys that would appear, you know, in court. And will you tell me your secret identity? No, guilty. And then you get thrown in the negative zone. No, guilty. You just get tossed in the negative zone. And that, that's the way that they processed those particular
cases.
So
it's more of an executive action than an actual.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a very valid way to put it. No, but you mentioned the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, which was an amazing TV movie. starring
but I think it also played out in the comics at one point. There is actually precedent for that in the comics.
Yeah, for sure.
Where Banner and the Hulk were effectively put on trial. And it becomes that sort of conjoined twin criminal situation.
Okay.
But, you know, if you want to look like some pre-code horror where, you know, a guy gets hanged from two nooses because his conjoined twin murdered a bunch of people.
that is some serious that's just creepy. That's like
I don't know if there is such a thing, but it seems like the sort of thing they would have done.
Well, when you write the Muggerville 7, what would it be? It wouldn't be eerie. It wouldn't be spooky. I can't think of a good one word. Horror comic name for it right now, but when you write that needs to be the first thing.
It's my new magazine size anthology, Cringy.
Yes, perfect, perfect.
Yes, it features narration by Aunt Cringy.
Ah, the craft keeper.
That's right.
I've heard tale of the craft keeper, Aunt Cringy.
Yes, indeed.
Good stuff. But yeah, no, there's no end to minor and major court cases. Also, lawyers and members of the judicial branch in comic books. It's got to be in the top three professions in comics for sure. From people that you knew. The people that I can tell you right now, Cole, that you know are lawyers, are in the legal profession, down to people that you probably didn't know. Like, for instance, did you know that the Rawhide Kid, or no, I'm sorry, the Two-Gun Kid was a lawyer?
And they never put that anywhere. It wasn't on the cover. It wasn't like Two-Gun Kid Esquire.
Well, he was a lawyer from Boston that ran off to...
So it's like the man who sought Liberty Valance.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart.
If you're going to do Jimmy Stewart, you have to act like you can't remember what you're going to say.
My Jimmy Stewart always walks a real precipice between Robin Williams and Jimmy Stewart.
Well, mine easily falls into...
Dana Carvey.
Chris Keeler.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like,
nearly everyone I do falls neatly into, very quickly digresses into a Garrison Keeler.
If you get a good Jimmy Stewart, you can go anywhere. That's what I say.
It's true.
So,
gotta ask for a touch, your monkey.
So there's a bunch of court cases in comic books in general that are pretty interesting, and some of them I had forgotten about until we started doing the research for this show. Some of them really stand out, like the trial of Superman.
Yes.
And then some of them I forgot until I started looking that I knew what they were and I read the comics. Like, do you remember Star Fox's trial?
Wow.
Does that ring
something
a bell?
About that rings vaguely familiar, but I don't.
It was in the She-Hulk comic. So the She-Hulk comic, as written by Byrne, was a real interesting. Like we've said it before, it was definitely Deadpool before Deadpool.
Yes.
And there were, you know, but this is the Dan Slott She-Hulk Volume 2, where she defends Starhawk because Starhawk wakes up in bed with this, like, mother of three. And if you don't know, this is a really interesting. So this
Star
is what
Fox.
This is what we talked about, right? What does law and order look like in a world with superheroes? Well, it looks like Star Fox, the walking roofie man, wakes up, because that's what Star Fox power is, right? He gets into your whatever part of your brain makes you horny, baby. That's I was gonna slide into a
Do I make you Randy?
Thank you. I was gonna slide into it, but I was
if Star Fox is ever in the cinematic universe, they should get Michael Myers to play him, baby.
So, aside, and we're getting punchy because we've been recording for like 2 hours now, but as an aside, I went to see, and you saw, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. It is, if it doesn't win something, I'm going to be pissed. But Mike Myers is in the movie as a record exec. And it wasn't for like 4 days that I'd finally put together why he was in this movie. And he was in the movie because of Wayne's World.
You know, the thing about it is, I was racking my brain. I knew he was in this movie, but I could not place him.
Do you know who he was?
Figure
it out?
Yes. And when I looked it up, oh my God, that was Michael Myers?
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Because usually when he's in a non-comedy type of thing, it's still very Michael Myers.
Yes. Yeah, this was a good role for him. But and then I was doing the research that Bohemian Rhapsody hit the charts 3 times since it was released. The initial time, upon the release of Wayne's World, and it's in the top 10 now, right now, because of the release of the movie. So, of course, they would put Mike Myers in it. Of course they would put him in it. So that just was like, I couldn't wrap my head around why he was cast until I finally put two and two together. It's like, of course he was. But yeah, so he wakes up in bed with this mother of three, and she has to defend Star Fox on rape allegations, which I thought was a really interesting story. It turns out he's, of course, innocent. He's set up, nothing happened, blah, blah, blah. But I thought that was a really interesting real-world application. You got a guy who's – that's his power. On top of being super strong.
Yeah, so who better to frame?
Yeah. Well, that. I don't even think it was a frame – I don't even think it was a frame job as much as it is a case of mistaken identity.
Okay.
You know, like that type of thing. Like a thing happened and he got mind wiped and he – like, you know, somebody transported him and whatever.
Yeah, like when, you know, somebody pretends to be a – No, really, honey. I'm, you know.
Right.
I'm this rock star, this actor.
And she also kicks him in the balls at least once.
Oh, good.
But I, you know what I mean? Like, in a world where you've got these superheroes, who holds the superheroes accountable? Well, I guess it's
exactly
a giant green lawyer. But I thought that was a really interesting entree. Do you remember any other ones that really stuck out to you as far as, like, court cases?
Well, you know, in the previous issue, we talk about top 10.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's a great, like in any sort of procedural, you get these recurring characters within a profession. You know, we're talking about, you know, like in Law and Order, sometimes you'd see the same defense attorneys over and over. Maybe, you know, 10, 15 episodes apart. But, you know, that was one of the neat things, the very thoughtful things about that show is they'd bring in the same actor to reprise their role again, you know, being hired by some new client around whom the story is revolving. And on one of the lists you found in your research, I thought it was great that Larry Frenzy Fishman –
Oh yeah.
From Top Ten, who is basically a lawyer who looks like a shark.
He's a fish man. Yeah.
He's like a humanoid shark or land shark. And he's defending, he's actually seen it a couple of times, but he's mainly defending one of the, or there is the defense lawyer for, you know, arriving at the precinct when his client is arrested. And, you know, it's that wonderful bit of irony. You know, there's actually, I kid you not, in Dallas, Texas, there is a big law office off of, I think, Central Expressway, where they have a gigantic great white shark on the building. I mean, like, you know, one of those taxidermy, the big fiberglass replica. You know, it's just glaring there from the highway. And in fact, one of the cops is, makes kind of a jab at Fishman, saying that, you know, this, you know, so something about, you know, not being very highly evolved after millions of years, and the guy gets all upset about how, suggesting he actually is a shark. He's more shark than man because he gets all upset, and he's like, you know, sharks are, have been around for billions of years, and we're, you know, alpha predators. He goes, I wasn't talking about sharks. Kind of taking a jab, the law profession, yes, especially the defense law. And I thought it was a wonderful little thing. I think one of my favorite court cases ever in comics comes from a comic that I invoke fairly often on this show, and that is Arkham Asylum Living Hell.
Oh, see, it didn't make my list, so I know of it, but I don't know it as well as you do.
Yeah, and essentially the story revolves around a white-collar criminal who tries to game the system. I'm trying to look up one little bit of a particular, but the court case itself is only a brief aspect of the entire thing. But essentially what happens is he has his day in court moved to Gotham City as the venue.
Okay.
And he, the idea being, his name is Warren White, and he has his, he's trying to plead criminal insanity.
And that's the, of course, why wouldn't you do it in Gotham?
Exactly. And what's wonderful is the judge, as he's pleading insanity, you know, or he's trying to play the case for insanity, and he is granted legally, you know, the jury rules on his side, and the presiding judge in passing sentence, you know, asks if he has anything to say for himself. And he's like, my bad. And the judge kind of smiles. He goes, well, Mr. White, you had your case moved to Gotham, the one city where you could stand a fighting chance of being found criminally insane. So I'm going to do with you what we do to all the criminally insane here, and remand you to Arkham Asylum.
Right. And, you're just, and like, oh,
he completely
shit.
Freaks out because he thinks he's going to Club Fed.
Right.
And it's just so brilliantly played out.
It's just like, oh, such shit.
A wonderful little bit of kind of judicial irony.
Yeah.
Explored there. And I cannot recommend.
I need to get my hands on that.
Yeah. Enough, because it's so full of amazing it's so full of amazing characters, and it, as is often the case with something like this, when you're trying to get really in depth with, like, say Arkham Asylum, and you don't really want to use, like, absolutely everybody in the Batman pantheon, especially since the fate of some might be up in the air, you can't, you know, you can't go into DC and say, I've got this brilliant story and the Riddler gets killed. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. So if anybody's going to die or get maimed or what have you, they have to be a minor player, or one you invented solely for the story. And what was very clever is one of the key invented characters turns out to be, the reason you don't never heard of him is because he's a Batgirl villain.
Oh.
And I thought, it's so subtle, but his whole story revolves around Batgirl tracking him down. But I'm going way off track, but I can't recommend that one enough.
That's awesome. There is a really awesome comic that I read a while ago. Okay, it was a 4-part mini, And I don't know if you remember this. You were reading DC at the time that this came out, and it was America versus the Justice Society. January to April 85, it was Roy and Dan Thomas. Do you remember that at all?
Something about that also rings familiar. I don't think I actually saw.
So it's set on Earth 2, okay? So you're on Earth 2 before Crisis on Infinite Earth. Batman has died on Earth 2. A journal is found from Batman. So Batman's journal. And it was in the pages of Batman's journal. Batman accuses the Justice Society of treason against the United States multiple times. And keep in mind, this is after the first time that the JSA retired because they refused to give up their identities in another court case. So they were kind of faced with the same Civil War idea, where you give us whatever, or you either get imprisoned or stop.
Yeah, you're basically summarily considered guilty.
Correct. So they go through an entire four issues of breaking down the entire backstory of the Justice Society in brilliant detail, just piece by piece of what the Justice Society is, what they've done, and why they're not, you know, why they're not treasonous.
Mm-hmm.
As a synonym, I guess, as a metaphor for McCarthyism, this entire four issues.
Yeah.
Come to find out, it was a hoax created by Batman because they were trying to catch this time traveling villain, whatever, right? Whatever the end game was. But what's really interesting is what else happened in 85 in January. Do you remember?
Oh.
Or in April 85.
April 85.
I
should be very familiar with this because by then I was in college. Oh, is this get my bearings here.
April of 85 is when Crisis on Infinite Earth starts.
Okay. I thought we were going to make some historical.
Well, for us, it's historical. They tell this story, right? This entire beautiful story of the Justice Society on Earth 2. And then it basically ends with Earth 2 getting wiped off the map, which I thought was kind of brilliant. That is the homage to the classic superhero. They tell this brilliant story right up to the point at which they know they're killing Earth 2. But it's this entire trial. They were brought before trial, brought before Congress, had to defend themselves in what was basically McCarthyism, because Batman wasn't there to step forward and say, guys, this was a big – I did this to capture a supervillain. This isn't real. But somebody found it and put him on trial for it. It was really cool. I remember reading it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so cool. So maybe you can check that out, and I can check out your what was it again? Tell the
Arkham
listeners.
Asylum Living Hell.
Yes,
definitely.
Tell the listeners again. I'll have to try to pick that up. Okay, cool. So what else you got? I just wanted to talk about that because I think that's awesome.
Well, I think another, and this is where you kind of in the realm of the superhero comic, you step away way away from, you know, where things are in the real world, as it were.
Sure.
And this is an example of exactly that. And this is the trial of Reed Richards.
Ah, yes.
Where essentially, because Galactus has hove back into view, or is still around because Reed Richards had him at death's door and effectively revived him and let him go. He kind of, Negan'd him. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
He is put on trial by the Shi'ar because they're like, okay, you had in your sway the single most deadly entity in the entire universe.
Right.
And decided, you know, he doesn't deserve to die.
Well, it's that all life is precious thing, right?
Yeah, and then, you know, the witnesses that are brought to bear, including Odin, who, and all of this is playing out as written by John Byrne for the, you know, in a very self self-serving John Byrne is invited to the trial.
Oh, is this one of the John Byrne appears in the comic book thing?
Oh, yes. In fact, when Odin arrives to bear witness, he Byrne cries out, "Holy free holies."
So wait, is this a...
Odin is real.
Is this a... Well, is this a Byrne exists in the Fantastic Four world?
This is the, yeah, this was the sort of thing that was going on a lot at Marvel, and different writers embraced it to various degrees, and it was literally like, you know, Byrne at the Marvel bullpen complaining that they, you know, that there's no, the concept being everything you're reading was sort of given over to the writer first person. From the heroes.
So it's an oral history of what happened.
Essentially, you know, much like we talked about in the prior issue about how Spider-Man doesn't have to write up arrest reports.
Yeah.
Effectively, I guess, instead of writing up arrest reports, you write up everything and send it to Marvel.
Or you just swing by and get debriefed.
Yeah, and then they just take that and... And like some sort of true crime writer, they just translate that into a viable entertainment.
I like that concept a lot. The concept of, oh no, it's all real. We're just
chroniclers. We're not writers. We haven't created dick.
Right. We're just giving you the information we're given secondhand at this point. That's a great dumb idea.
I lean personally more toward dumb. That always bothered me.
That's why especially, you stopped reading Marvel.
Yeah, well, especially during a period where they decided to have their characters answer the letters, page letters.
This makes you so mad. This is so good. I love it. I love this part. The Wolverine, when he would...
I hate to disillusion you, bub. We are real. No, you're not.
One of my favorite things about doing this show with you every week is just pushing the right button to get you real mad at something that happened like 30 years ago. To me, that's
so crazy. Yeah, this was that sort of thing again, and but that was a major trial and effectively a kangaroo court battle. It was sort of like Space Hague.
Space Hague.
Space Hague.
Can we write Space Hague?
We need to write Space Hague.
Well, I mean, I think at some point, and you know, we're about halfway through this issue. I think we do need to talk about Matt Murdock.
Oh God, yes.
And the concept of the concept of the lawyer who doesn't get justice by day, so decides that they're going to get justice by night. Is pretty prevailing in comics because you've got Daredevil, which I think is sort of the template for that idea. But then you've also got two different Manhunters.
Yeah, that's true.
From DC that follow that. Shadowhawk that follows that same. Robin from Earth 2 is one of those.
Well, also New York District Attorney, an elected official, Adrian Chase.
Yes.
In DC Comics, in the pages of Teen Titans, in a Teen Titans annual, if memory serves, decides to enough is enough and takes the law into his own hands and dons a sporting 80s tracksuit.
Oh, it's like he's going skiing.
You just expected a Let's Get Physical soundtrack behind him.
Some great neon blue on that thing.
Yeah. And goes out and does Punisher-style murder.
Yeah, just even...
And then he gets his own damn book for years. And then a woman takes over the mantle.
Well, and my...
Somebody else who's just as pissed off.
My thing about that is it's not even Punisher-style murder because... Punisher, at least for given value of Punisher, he's like, I'm going to stop the mafia. This Vigilante's like, I'm going to stop this guy who committed murder and got off. by killing him Vigilante, to death.
It's like Michael Douglas in the Star Chamber.
Wow.
Except the people he was going up against, not Michael Douglas's character.
That might be the deepest cut the disco has had in a
Well, you know what they say, that the Michael Douglas cut is the deepest.
I think that's the deepest cut we've had in an entire year. The Star Chamber. I don't think I've thought about the Star Chamber since the last time you brought up the Star Chamber.
I don't think you've thought of the Star Chamber since the Star Chamber.
I think you're probably right. Good Lord. But yeah, at least the Punisher was like, all right, I'm going to bring down the mafia that killed my family. Vigilante's like, you got away with murder. Now I'm going to murder your face. At least Daredevil right. didn't do that. He's like, you know what? You don't need those teeth where you're going. Where...
Yeah, well, at least, you know, with Punisher, he'd like, you know, the mob bosses are all gathered together. They're having their sweet sausage and their poker night, and he just goes in with
What? You don't get to slide sweet sausage and poker night through and not get it to have a mention. What? I think Cole's dead now. I think we killed Cole.
Oh my.
But
I shouldn't have eaten all that sweet sausage.
You couldn't pass up sweet sausage and poker night. So continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail your thought.
He goes in there with like a fistful of rocket-powered grenades and blows the whole place to the foundation. You know, Adrian Chase comes in with an M16 and a pair of neon yellow nunchucks.
He's got to match his belt.
Yeah.
Who looked at his outfit and said that?
He was the most stylish murderer out there.
And make no mistake, he was a murderer. Like. Yeah. That's it.
But he would not only, like, you know, Punisher will, like, you know, he's pretty sure you know at some level you're guilty.
Right.
Of really bad things. So he has no qualms about, like, you know, snipering you from a distance. You know, 1 minute you're there, you know, talking about the numbers and the, and, you know, who hadn't paid their protection. The next minute your head's just splattered all over the wall. But Vigilante felt like he had to deliver the news personally.
Right. I think the thing about...
I'm going to kill you, but I want to be absolutely sure you understand why.
I think the thing about the Punisher was... But the thing that makes Punisher, I guess, I'm going to say this, this is going to be a weird thing to say out loud, more innocent than the Vigilante is... The Punisher didn't pose as the attorney and then go out and do it.
Yeah, he wasn't like not even judge or jury, but he was definitely executioner.
Right. Yes.
I love the fact that one of the characters that came up in the research was Ronan the Accuser. He's like Marvel's intergalactic Judge Dredd.
Well, he's like, he certainly. Well, and that's the point, right? Is like their system of law is, yeah, we got these guys. They go out. All they have to do is accuse you. And once they've accused you, it's like duck, duck, goose with a giant.
Yeah, it's like, well, everybody's guilty of something.
Right.
It seems to be the core value there.
Right.
Puts the hammer in Hammurabi.
Damn it, that was good. I want to end the show right now. That was too good to keep going.
I keep doing that to you.
You do. This was a good one. That was solid work, my friend. I have no complaints about what you just said. But while we're on the topic of Marvel and the end-all be-all of Law and Order, we got to talk about the Living Tribunal. Three-headed Oscar statue that decides everything. Three-faced. I'm sorry. That was inaccurate.
That's true.
Yeah, it just shows up, and he's just like, you know, talk about a lifetime appointment to a court. This guy, been around since the beginning of time, just passing laws, just putting them out there.
Yep.
This freak.
And he's actually is a self-imposed legal system that has the power to set precedent.
Oh, sure.
You know, his court can effectively, you know, does not have to wait for the judicial branch to hand down law. He can just sort of, you know, fart law out at will.
That's true. That's true. He can just say, this is the law now. You deal with it. He's decided things like Adam Warlock when he had the gauntlet during, which Infinity? What was the, it was Infinity. Was it
Crusade or?
Yeah, or the comic. What was the comic where, Infinity Watch, maybe?
I think so. You know, I used to have an Infinity Watch, but despite the claims of the commercials, it did not last forever. And just like my damn blunt Ginsu knife, they've gone out of business. I can't do jack about it.
I've got the Infinity Watch.
I've got my Infinity Watch, my Ginsu knife, and my Curtis Mathis TV all in a corner of the garage.
You got a food dehydrator right there? You got some Ronco?
That's right.
God, I miss Ron Popeil. That guy did it better than anybody else, man. Like, better than ShamWow, dude. Better than Billy Mays.
Yeah.
Ron Popeil, the original infomercial huckster. God bless his soul. I had one of those Popeil fishing poles.
Oh, pocket fisherman.
Yeah. Yeah, I had one of those when I was a kid. I think it was my dad's, and then I just kind of stole it.
Yeah, the thing that looked like a hand mixer and a... And a fishing pole had a baby.
Yes, it did. It absolutely, that is accurate. I cannot argue with the accuracy of what you just said. No, but he decided that Adam Warlock just didn't get that power. He's like, that's too much for you, buddy. Just, you can't use it. He's like, what? That's some shit. Like, yep, nope, you're done.
Yeah, that's
sorry about you. But yeah, that's the Living Tribunal's just the ultimate judicial power in the Marvel Universe, the Living Tribunal. It's ridiculous. I'm trying to think of other great court cases.
Well, I think one of the things we have to talk about, because Catherine wanted me to mention, in keeping with the whole Law and Order type of thing.
Please do.
Is that there was a comic. Let's see if I can remember who that was by. Called Yikes.
Called Yikes.
Yikes. And Yikes was basically, it's wonderful, these little cherubic, like a vampire and a like a zombie.
Yeah.
And then it spun off another called Tykes. And it was, they're just absolutely hilarious little vignettes and stuff. And Catherine envisioned the kids from Yikes and Tykes, like, playing baseball in a, you know, like, Sandlot style.
Sure.
And they, you know, and one of them's yelling, you know, you've lost the ball, go get it. And he wanders off and comes back with his severed head. He's gripping by the hair, and they're freaking out. It's like, that's our ball over there. And you see this, one of them's holding up another severed head. Dun-dun!
So it's like the most jacked up Stand By Me.
Exactly.
That's funny. I like that a lot. That's good. That's cool. We can do that. We can make that happen, right?
Look up 1995's Yikes.
I'm looking at it now. It's pretty interesting. I think it's cool. I think it's cool. I'm into it. Like, yeah.
With apologies to Stephen K. Wiseman, that's your Yikes Law and Order.
Just dong dong, and that's the one issue that it's that's the one panel, like the four panel Law and Order riff that they get.
Exactly.
Oh, let's talk about the time that Magneto was put on trial.
Oh my God, of course.
Which is the most natural thing in the world to do.
Oh yeah.
I mean, because the only time you're going to get,
and I can actually see the cover with the giant super wrist, like, forearm shackles.
Yes, yes, those big giant things that they decided were necessary in Marvel Comics whenever you arrested somebody. Were those giant? Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, yes, yes. But But I guess the only time you're going to get Magneto to be on trial is when he's going through one of his I'm a good guy phase. So you had to wait until the I'm a good guy to put Magneto on trial. And then you got to take him to the world court and make him stand trial for genocide? What do you put him on trial for?
Yeah.
And he, you know, he defends it as, you know, you were trying to wipe out my race, so we were just defending, you know, and he throws Auschwitz in there and in the whole nine yards. But I think more interesting on his, you know, as part of his defense team, he has the world's greatest psychic. So what does that do in a courtroom? Like, do you just swear that you're not going to use your powers in the worst possible way? Because guess what, Professor X? You're not proven that you're the most responsible person with powers like that in the past. So what are you going to do? But yes, this jackass that is he goes on trial, and then the Fenris twins crash the trial.
Of course,
try to kidnap Magneto, but the courts somehow, and I think by somehow what I'm saying is Professor X decide that he's while not innocent. He's basically released on time served for his attempted, you know, genocide on the human race multiple times. And then he and Xavier just head into space to talk to the Shi'ar. And that's the end of that. Like, what? Like, that's not how this works. That's not how law works, man. Oh, shit. This is good stuff. Hey, there's somebody I want you to talk about, Cole.
Yeah.
Possibly the most longstanding and accredited member of the fine profession of prosecution or defense. I guess it's defense in the comic book world. And that is none other than Hanna-Barbera's own Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Oh, God. Oh. There's probably no better depiction of the true nature of the legal system
than Harvey Birdman. But what I like about Harvey Birdman, attorney at law, is that they take the ridiculous idea of representing cartoon characters or superheroes to the apex of that mountain. And I think that that's, for me, the most interesting thing is just showing how dumb it is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So what you thinking about over there? What you got? What's going on in that brain of yours?
Well, one thing I wanted to talk about, since we are discussing jurisprudence and trials and things like that, is back in the day when this gigantic newspaper, this ad rag known as the Comics Buyer's Guide, was in the pre-internet years of analog news.
Right.
Comics Buyer's Guide was where you found every back issue under the sun that you ever wanted. You found out all kinds of information about new and upcoming things. You found out about things that you'd never heard of. There was, I believe the man was a lawyer by the name of Bob Ingersoll, who wrote a column called The Law is a Ass.
The law is what?
The law is a ass.
A ass.
A ass.
Okay.
Taken from, crap, what am I thinking of here? Much Ado About Nothing.
Okay.
I can't remember the character's name, but the sort of comic relief character that's introduced in where refers to the law in that way in a court case. Or when a constable is trying to work out the details about these henchmen of Don John, who he's in his duties as a as sort of a deputy of the courts has apprehended.
Okay.
And they're trying to explain the law. He says the law is ass. He's the character is none too bright, but Ingersoll would write columns picking at famous comics from a real world legal standpoint.
Okay.
And I actually stumbled on one. It was, I believe it was the fourth installment of his column from 1983, where he talks about how when the Flash killed the Reverse Flash, despite the fact that they were attempting to have Flash inadvertently commit the crime of murder, technically it was justifiable homicide under the doctrine of self-defense.
Really?
That in a situation like this, when he saved her from the Reverse Flash by literally on behalf of her, of Fiona yeah. Webb, he was sort of a, what would you call it? Sort of a perfunctory, not perfunctory, but it's literally like taking on the role of her defending herself in the defense of her in a situation of life and death.
Okay.
And I'll just steal a line from this. More specifically, Flash could defend Fiona Webb and invoke self-defense to protect himself. And in defending Fiona, Flash would be permitted to use exactly the same amount of force Fiona could have used if she were defending herself.
It's really interesting.
So it's one of these things where I remember reading one of his columns, and he's just like picking away at this stuff that was written in the 30s and complaining about how, like, when these criminals cross the state line, there's actually a line painted across the highway. So, you know, it was 30s comics. They weren't trying to be dong dong.
Right. Right. That's funny, though. That's awesome. Like, and I found another, speaking of, there was, Three Geeks and a Law blog is one that I, in my research, I stumbled on, and it is a law blog addressing the folk. I have three intrepid law geeks, and there's a bunch of stuff on here that's like you know, they do some standard stuff, but then all of a sudden it's like music stuff and comic book stuff and explorations of you know, things you wouldn't think about. But it makes complete sense that if you or I, Cole, were lawyers, we wouldn't like comic books any less, and we would probably apply that knowledge that we've spent all that time accumulating to the idea of law and or whatever it is that we're doing, which I thought was really interesting that these guys are super into, like, comics and also law.
Yes, exactly. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. Like, that's pretty cool. But I found a few things on them. And like I said last issue, I found these – people write papers on this idea all the time. There's another one called Law in the Multiverse. It's lawinthemultiverse.com. Superheroes, Supervillains, and the Law. And there's –
The Law.
Yeah, they're a little
– The Law.
The Law. They're a little.
Sorry, I had to invoke Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
In here, like this top post that I'm looking at, which was actually fairly recently updated, so this is still around. There's apparently this thing written by this guy named Jed Bodger. Jed Bodger is the senior director of taxation at the Sierra Nevada Corp. And he goes through and explains the Tax Cut and Jobs Act and how it would affect superheroes and their associated businesses.
Oh, wow.
So things like Tony Stark and Reed Richards and Janet Van Dyne. And I, you know, it's a real interesting way to put to draw readers in and make it understandable. The mystery of Danny Rand's inheritance, several reasons of ask questions, so he goes through and explains the law behind how Danny recovered his inheritance after the, you know, after being gone for so long at Kunlun. like, it's just really interesting. Like, conflict of interest in the representation by Matt Murdock of alleged criminals apprehended by Daredevil. So, like, literally exactly what we're talking about. This guy has written
That's amazing.
Literal like, a lawyer employed by a public entity, either as a lawyer or in some other role, shall not undertake the representation of any other client if the representation presents a substantial risk of a lawyer's responsibility to that public entity would limit the lawyer's ability to provide independent advice or diligent and competent representation of that public entity or client. He goes through and cites precedent on the things that we're talking about. Like, that's insanely cool. Like, this guy is awesome. Is Wonder Woman an illegal immigrant? He writes about all, is Batman a murderer? Like, this is just, this guy's rad. All right. I got a crush on this guy. Do you have, so we're coming up against it, Cole. What do you got? What's last words? What's final thoughts?
Well, I have to recommend, on behalf of myself and especially of Catherine, Mrs. Jedi Cole, Wolf and Bird. Was it Attorney? Was it?
I can't remember exactly how it, like, it was Wolf and Bird, but what was it?
Oh, Counselors of the Macabre.
Yes, 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 yes.
And so it's basically like trial law with supernatural twist.
Okay.
And this is long before Angel and Wolfram and Hart.
That's a good reference too.
And you know, it's a fun read and clever kind of take on the legal system, and you know, fantasy monsters and
that's cool.
And you know, old pre-code horror and stuff like that. And
you know, the years. Or...
So in our the Law and Order in which the kids from Yikes. are, you know, finding an extra severed head. Catherine envisioned that Wolf and Bird would be the ones
defending them.
Yeah, defending them in court.
I'm trying to get a year on when these guys, when this was.
This would have been like the early 90s, maybe.
It looks like they first appeared in the Brooklyn paper.
Wow.
In 83 to 96. 83 from 83 to 97, the National Law Journal ran a weekly strip.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, yeah, and then they got their own book. It looks like 94, but it started in 79 in the Brooklyn paper, and then 83 to 97, the Law Journal ran a strip weekly. Which is you need to tell Catherine that, because that's really
cool.
And then it ran, and then they had their own book from. 90, it looks like 95 on, and then it became a webcomic that was discontinued in 2013 and then started back up in 2014. And then they got some books, Life Partner of Frankenstein, The Werewolf of New York, and Zombie Wife, which isn't out yet.
Interesting.
So, pretty prolific from Exhibit A Press there.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that out. I'm interested in that. All right. Why don't you plug us up? Do you have any, like, final thoughts to wrap these two issues together? Anything poignant?
I think the fascinating thing is there is a serious real world. I think the legal system, be it law enforcement or jurisprudence, is a real sticky wicket.
Yeah.
In comics, because there you can't. The real world we know ceases to exist.
Yeah.
In a situation where, you know, you can't have it both ways, and the effectively the advent of the superhero ruins everything. Everything has to change to the point where you get into a situation where to take it a little bit. In a unique direction, it's from another Alan Moore work, Miracle Man, where, you know, big spoiler alert, where he effectively imposes his will on the entire world, and of course, being a Brit, Margaret Thatcher is the one he's addressing in this particular case, and about, you know, where she's effectively saying, you know, we can't allow this sort of thing.
Sure.
You coming in and telling everybody in the entire world what for, and he just it's so well played, is this sort of just sideward glance and him just simply saying, allow. I literally am getting like the funky shivers right now. Just
you're getting the weird remembering
because because that was just one of those moments in comics that just like damn, and there's so many from Moore anyway.
Right. Oh yeah. No, you're right. It gets all. You know, and the best we can hope is people in comics. And I think you gave us the byline for Hey Kids Comics. Superheroes mess up everything. Welcome to Hey Kids Comics, where superheroes mess up everything. but yeah, the best we can do, you know, when you get caught between the moon and New York City, the best you can do is just provide a moral compass. Christopher Cross is a god, is provide a moral compass to what's going on. And I think that as a Grecian chorus and as a everyman, you know, police and lawyers and judges and jailers do that. You can tell a story through those people. All right, Cole, let's plug it up and get out of here. Let these wonderful – they've listened to us ramble about lawyers and cops for 2 hours. Let's let them let's let them get out of here, and we'll come back next week and hopefully bring them some
– yeah, because at this point, they're the ones asking, where does it end?
That they're Orbaching us right now. Can we let them
– they're Waterstoning.
Yeah.
Heavily Waterstoning. Yes, we're coming to you from the Fifth Circuit Court of the Jedi Cole Universe, Part 14, at the JediCole.com. You can write to us, send us your briefs and your writs to.
Please don't send me your briefs. I love you all, but
your virtual briefs. To what the hell is it? It's JCUmail@yahoo.com, and be sure and check me out over at DallasOnAir.com on the first and third Sundays of every month at the Rantcore Pit Live with myself and Eddie Medina talking up the Star Wars, and of course the my new show, and that is 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central at DallasOnAir.com, and on the third Sunday of every month, I also have my new show, which is not so new anymore. It's just a little over a year old now. Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, Isle of Toys, where we're talking up all kinds of cool toys and toy lines and toy collecting and customizing and everything else. And that is 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central, right before the Rancor Pit Live on its second monthly date.
Blam! And you can find us on all the social medias at HK Comics Show. All right, join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Cole and I are going to try to keep our noses clean and stay out of this revolving door judicial system that we live in here in the world of comic books. All right, Cole, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. And one last time, Cole, 1, 2, 3. Dong, dong. Dong, dong. Good night, everybody.